So this is the Happy House Hunters, and we also have a group called Newbie Investors. We also have the ins and outs of opening a bed and breakfast or any type of a short-term rental. And all of it kind of comes together because a lot of times it's all the same stuff. When you're looking for a property, and I'm sure Jesse will back me up on this one. When you're looking for a property, oftentimes you're not real sure exactly how you're going to use the property. You may be looking for it for a particular use, like a short term or a midterm or a long term, or maybe you're going to house hack, or maybe you're going to buy something for your primary residence for all these other reasons. But I am a firm believer at the end of the day that you have to be able to hold something long term and make the numbers work. If the numbers work, holding it long term, then that is your plan B. That is your out. That is your safety net, because then you can put it out there as a short term. If it's in a good location and you go, oh wow, I could really do well as a midterm or a short term. But if something happens, and again, the big thing that happened that I remember is most recently when we went through the whole COVID epidemic. Short-term rentals just went empty because folks weren't allowed to travel and nobody knew what was going on. And you guys remember that? And all of a sudden, people that had everything in that one pot that their short-term rentals was going to be their godsend, all of a sudden they were scraping the bottom of the barrel to try to keep all of those, especially those folks that were doing arbitrage. And we can talk about that if you want. But long story short, I'm a firm believer that you have to make your numbers work for long term because everyone needs a house. Everyone needs a place to live. And everyone is going to spend their money on putting a roof over their heads, no matter what else comes along. That is always going to be a priority. And so when you are a housing provider and you can actually, manage all of your numbers to be successful at long term, then you're going to be super successful at midterm or short term. So anyway, that's just my little spiel on real estate, which is why all of our groups can come together, because whether you're looking for something for short term or midterm or long term or to house hack or to live in, finding that property has a lot of the same components. The only thing it's going to be different might be a neighborhood you look in, especially if it's something you want a house hack where you're going to live in part of it. You might have a particular school district you want to be in because of your kids. You might want to be close to family members. So maybe you want to be close to your mom or a grandparent. And so you're going to be looking in a particular neighborhood. The only difference in finding is where you're going to look. And so today we're going to talk to Jessie about finding, because she knows how to find these deals. Jessie, I don't know how you do it. You find, not only are you finding deals for you, but you're finding deals for your students. Jessie also has a program, and I'm going to let her talk about that before we go today. But Jessie, what do you tell yourself first, or your clients, when they're trying to find a property? And give me a little bit of a backstory. How did you finally decide that finding was going to be your superpower?
Well, Kathy, thanks so much for having me. As always, you are the hostess of the mostest. So I started in real estate about 13 years ago as an accidental landlord. And so I bought a house and really couldn't comfortably afford the mortgage. So I got me some roommates, and then those roommates were paying my bills, and I was like, this is pretty cool. So
You were house hacking and didn't even know
I didn't even know I was house hacking. Was it even really a term 13 years ago? Or
I don't think it was.
I don't think it was even official term. And so I ended up buying a new house, turned the first one into a long-term rental, had some roommates. As you all can see, it's a zoo here, so just ignore all the animals. Bought a third house and then turned the first two into long-term rentals, had roommates. And so at this point, it was pretty sweet. Like, all my bills were paid. I still had a W-2 job, and started really starting to think about real estate more seriously as a career. Fast forward to 2018, quit my job, went full-time real estate, couple years later, I was wholesaling everything, so I was
Okay, now
finding.
what made you go full time? I mean, for those of us that are on here that are like, we still are doing the day job, we're still whatever, we're not ready to pull the plug on the other income. What made you decide to go full time?
I was working really, really hard for someone else, and I there was no chance. What? Okay, really the catalyst. I knew I always was going to do real estate at some point, but the real catalyst is that I was up for a raise and I asked for something very modest and was denied and was like, well, that's the end of that. You know, this isn't going to be my future. I can go work really hard for myself. And so that was, I quit my W-2 in 2018, went real estate full time. I was going to a lot of CoREIT meetings. So I think I heard everyone here is in Central Ohio. So Vina, she had a wholesaling academy thing. It was like $1,000, which at the time felt like a ton of money. And so I invested my $1,000. I went through a little program and then I was wholesaling. And it took some time to build up the systems and processes and all that. But I eventually got there. I remember my very first wholesale check was all the money in the world. And it was the confidence that I knew I could do real estate full time. And so from there, for 2 years, really, pretty much through 2021, I was wholesaling everything. And I was buying some deals, but I was doing it the wrong way. I didn't know that you could buy with hard money. I didn't know you could do the Burr method or refinance or anything. So it wasn't until January 2021 that I got really serious about capitalizing on these deals I'm finding, buying them quick, and then having multiple exit strategies, like we talked about. And then since then, I went from 11 doors to just over 70 in the last three
Just
and a half
since
years.
2020,
2021. Yeah.
2021. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're wholesaling. You went through a program. The first thing that I want everyone in this group to pull out of this is that she paid for a mentor.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Because you don't know what you don't know. And you can be out there, trying it trial and error. And sometimes it's a whole lot easier to just pay someone else to give you all those trial and errors that they already did. So you don't have to do them. And so once they have a proven method, like Vina, through Aurea, said you simply tapped into her program and took the course. How long was her course? How long did you, I mean, was it,
It
I
was,
mean,
there were, I don't
and
think
you're
it was
working,
very,
right? You're still working.
I think it was 8 weeks, maybe like a weekly call and then a huge binder you go through. This was like back in the binder days when courses came in, like CD-ROMs.
Yeah,
And
right.
so it was like a big workbook and then like, I think 8 weeks, maybe.
Okay, but the point is that you knew that you wanted to move the needle in your life from point A to point B, and you said, I'm gonna dedicate myself to this program. I'm gonna settle in. I'm gonna read the binder. I'm gonna do the assignments. I'm gonna come out the other end, and I'm gonna do something
Yeah.
different. Even if it's wrong, I'm going to do something different and see if this will work for me. And sometimes you have to have some of that faith to do that. I know I did the same thing in and again, I don't want to switch subjects, but I wanted to become an author and I didn't know what I didn't know. So I joined an authors group and did the same thing. And I paid to go through the program and now I have two published books.
There you go.
So on the bestseller list on Amazon. But the
Yeah, and
point is
I've wholesaled I'm probably close to 100 deals at this point. So if you put in the effort and you learn from an expert, it definitely can pay off.
yeah, so that's point number one is if you don't have a mentor and you want to move the needle, I'm not going to tell you which mentor to get. It depends on what it is you want to do with your life and where it is that you want to go. So I believe that you have to kind of reverse engineer that a little bit and you have to picture yourself, what do I want my life to look like? And then say, okay, if this is what I want my life to look like, what are folks doing that already have a life that looks like that?
Sure.
What are they doing? And then once you find out what they're doing, then reverse engineer that and go backwards and say, what do I have to learn to get from where I am to where they are? Because that's where I want to be. And then find a program or a person or a mentor that can help you get there. So And if anybody has any questions as we're talking, feel free to unmute and jump in and ask your questions. So now you're wholesaling, you're making some money, which is good because now you're working hard for yourself and you're making money and that's what you wanted. What made you decide that you wanted now to segue, if you will, from just making money to buying and holding some of those deals and keeping them for yourself?
Yes. Yeah. So I had remember early in my story, I've had a taste of real estate. And so I was not buying as an investor. I was buying as an owner occupant, but someone else was paying my bills. So I kind of already had a taste of the long term. And then this was from, I bought my condo, the first one in 2013, and then ended up selling it 2017-ish. And I know it's Austin, Texas. I know it was a crazy time in real estate. So this isn't like repeatable, but we had 100K in equity in 4 years. And I was like, okay, wow. Like buy and hold, like this is the way to go. Because not only am I being paid every month, I also still get that payday at the end. I think so many people forget about that when they're underwriting deals is like, well, let me just flip it and make 40K. Okay, well, what if you got paid 200 times in the middle and then you made, instead of 40, call it 100. What if you did that? Because you still get that pot of gold at the end. And so
I have a deal like that just now, and I'm gonna tell you about it. But go ahead, Jesse. So I
had the taste of it. I had the taste of long-term buy and hold. And so I knew like, okay, first of all, I'm also a very, very frugal person. Very frugal. So I was making a bunch of money and I'm like, what do I do with all this money? Like, I need to put it somewhere. I'm not going to go buy a fancy car or buy purses or, you know, I didn't spend it. And so I was like, oh, well, what do I do with this? And the obvious answer was put it back into real estate. And so it was really a no-brainer from wholesaling to buying.
Right. Because again, if you put it back into real estate, now your money is going to make money and it's going to grow while it's making you cash flow. So I'm going to give the folks a real life example. I'm right now in the middle of one. I'm going to say 10 years ago, I didn't even want this house. This is how so bizarre this is. My daughter and son-in-law at the time wanted to buy a house. I saw this house. It had the right number of bedrooms, blah, 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 blah. And they said, no, because my son-in-law likes to go fishing and he had a fishing boat and, you know, and they're like, we don't want to be in town. And that one's inside in town. So we want something out in the country. So I nixed it, even though the price, it was a foreclosure back 10 years ago. So I just nixed it and said, well, the kids don't want that one. And it's really too big as a rental because it's a big four bedroom with a walk-up attic, which could be a fifth room. It has a big 2.5 car garage with a fold down wood staircase with an attic in the garage for storage. Corner lot, you walk out the front door, you're looking at Mount Pleasant in Lancaster, big, beautiful front yard, gorgeous, gorgeous home. And it was in foreclosure for $65,000.
Yeah, buy it, done.
And so I had nixed it because I was trying to help the kids get a house and they wanted something in the country. So we found their house in the country, yada, yada, yada. So time moves on. And one of our friends went into contract for that house. And I didn't feel like I missed out on it because I had looked at it and you know, and said, no, that's not the house that I'm going to buy. So our friend had it in contract. At the closing table, he gets a little concerned because he notices there's a little bit of mold around one of the light fixtures in the mother-in-law suite of the house. And he goes, oh my gosh, what if the whole attic area is filled with mold? So at the closing, he decides to walk on the deal. Our realtor called me up. Mark and I, we were out at dinner. She said, you sure you don't want this house? She said, you've already seen it. And she said, the price is good. It's a great house, even if you flip it. And so we were like, oh, okay. All right. So I gave some stupid, like 59,000 or something. I said, okay, I'll buy it for 50. And the bank said, take it. They wanted it because it was in foreclosure and they wanted it off their books. So they said,
they were about to get paid. They were about, in their mind, there was a done deal.
Oh yeah, and also remember how the banks work. You know, this had been an FHA loan that went into foreclosure, so they basically already got their money through the FHA program because it was already federally insured, that first loan that went into foreclosure. So they're just wanting to clear it off their books. So I lowballed the offer, went into contract. We closed at the closing table. We closed on this other guy's closing because you know the appraisals were all done, everything was done. We were doing a cash deal. So we bought the house. Now Mark is like, okay, now let's go to dinner. So now as we started to go to dinner, I said, what if there is mold all through that? And he goes, would you feel better if we just go over and look at it? And I said, yeah, I would. We were dressed for dinner. We stopped at a filling station. We bought a box of trash bags. We went over to the house because we had just closed on it. We went over to the house. We found a 5 gallon paint bucket that he turned upside down to stand on. He said, you hold the trash bag. I held the trash bag. He got up. He pulled the light down out of a closet, no less. That's the only place we could see a little bit of mold. And maybe for 3 inches around the light, there was some mold where moisture had settled because the roof right above it, it was a flat roof on the mother-in-law suite, had a little bit of a leak. That was the extent of the
Sounds good.
entire mold. We threw that in a trash bag. He said, you feel better now? I said, yeah, I feel much better. We went to dinner, had a wonderful time, knew that we just bought this house for like $59,000. So now, fast forward, 10 years goes by. I've had the house rented for 10 years. I have made over $100,000 in rent. And remember, let's just use round numbers. I paid $60,000 for it, collected $100,000 in rent over the last 10-year period. And so now the some long-term tenants, I've had a total of three tenants in there over a 10-year period. The last tenants totally destroyed the house.
Oh no.
So when they moved out, my first reaction was I was a little heartbroken because I was like, oh, we didn't have to ever put this much money into it when we bought it because it was really in good shape. But now I'm like, oh great. So now I've put 34,000 into rehabbing it. We had to tear it down to the subfloors. We had to tear out all the cabinets, all the vanities, all the tubs,
Is
everything.
this
We
the one you were just saying on social media? It was your biggest rehab? Yeah.
yes, the biggest rehab I've ever done. So we've gutted the whole house, put it back together, $34,000. And of course, my first reaction was to grumble about the $34,000. And Mark goes, well, wait a minute. He goes, you made $100,000 over the last 10 years in rent. I said, I know. So I said, you know what? And we're going to talk about the burn method that Jesse does, but I said, you know what? I'm going to refinance this one and I'm going to get my 34,000 back. You know, because I took that out of my retirement account. I said, I'm going to get my money back. So I called the bank that I use all the time and he said, well, we're going to have to do an appraisal. And I'm like, okay. So they did the appraisal and he said, you're fine, the appraisal's fine, because I'm not pulling out a ton. I'm just pulling out enough to get my money back. And I said, by the way, I said, and this is just going to affirm what Jesse was talking about. I said, what did that house appraise for? And he goes, oh, it was just average. And I said, well, what's average? And he, $290,000.
I was going to guess 260.
290.
Good for you.
So I've made 100,000 in rent. I only paid 64, put another 34 into this rehab, and I've already earned 100,000 in rental income, and it appraised for 290. And yes, folks, I've put it back out on the market, and I doubled the rent. And I had a line of people that wanted that house. So that's an example of what Jesse's talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you could have probably bought it for 60, put 20 into it at the time, sold it for, I don't know what, 120, maybe
Maybe
150.
120, 140.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so you could have made your 40, 50K, a nice little payday, or you could have made 250 in just, 10 years. It sounds like, you're hearing the story and it sounds like 10 years, but think about like 10 years ago and how, I mean, it's a flash of an eye. Like it's
Well,
going to be
but I
before you know
received income the whole time.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, of course, but it's like, you have to deal with these tenants for 10 years and you have to do this, that, and the other. And it's like, it's worth it. It is so worth it. Yeah.
I love that. So walk us through how do you identify when you're finding a deal? What is your criteria for finding that perfect deal?
So are we talking like the channel of where I would find it, or more like the numbers?
Just to start from the beginning, what do you do when, because let's say that you're one of these new folks. Think back to when you were brand new.
Yep.
You're one of these newbies that's on this call, and you're like, I need to find a deal. Where do I start?
Okay. So really there's four main kind of channels that we use to source the deals. And in order of like how easy to how hard they are, I would say the MLS would be the easiest because everyone has access. You have a real estate agent who's a professional, who's walking you through step by step. So you don't have to be an expert, right? You just need to know how to fund it, but your agent can help you. So I'd say the MLS is the easiest. Next, I would
Well,
say.
now, and I'm going to jump in. So for those of you that say, okay, MLS, find a realtor that works with investment properties. That's probably the key for finding the right realtor. Somebody that does a lot of homeowner properties is a great realtor, but they may not be the realtor for you looking for an investment property. And we have one at the Happy House Hunters. It's Kyle Brandon. He does tons and tons of investment properties for us. And he just sets this up on the MLS where I just tell him, this is the zip code I'm looking in. Remember, we talked earlier about the neighborhood. I go, this is the zip code I want, and this is the price point that I want. And he just sets it up to where it just automatically comes into my inbox every morning.
Yep. And then if with working with a, investor friendly realtor, if there's one that you like and that it, they can help you look at the numbers, they can help you get access to the property, they, will probably be there to walk it with you and be able to point out different things you would have to consider. So I consider the MLS really kind of the easiest, the lowest barrier to entry, and you have someone who is a licensed expert who is kind of holding your hand through some of, not everyone knows how to underwrite a deal the same way you would, but they can at least help you point out some, different issues the house may have, et cetera. And
And you know the house is available too.
the house is available. Yeah,
Right,
exactly
right,
right.
right.
And someone else does all the paperwork for you. So you don't need your own contracts, you don't need your own anything like that. So then next, kind of easiest slash most accessible, I would say, is working with a wholesaler because they have gone out and done the work to do the marketing, to negotiate the deal, to put the property under contract. They have their own contracts. They have a photo set. They've arranged the walkthrough. They've done the title work. They've done all of this, the effort. And, the idea is you're going to pay them a fee as the buyer, the will pay a fee for all the work that they've done. And so I would call that one kind of the second easiest there because someone's going to help you through it, but that person is not licensed. And that person, every single, like every wholesaler has a slightly different process. Every seller has a different process. So you just have to ask a few more questions, but really it's someone who's done a lot of the work. It is.
And am I right that you'll develop a relationship maybe, and so you'll use the same wholesaler, and the wholesaler will bring you the deals first if you start to build that relationship with them. And there's also a title, a company component in there that you'll get familiar with how they do business, and then you can just 10x your business from there
So
because
we, Laura and I is Laura's my wife. We were, I was negotiating with a wholesaler based on a photo set, and it's someone I buy from pretty frequently. And so, I was like, "Hey, babe, we were on the way to dinner." Kind of actually quite a similar story, except we weren't dressed nice. We were just like in, sweatpants or whatever. But we were like, dress, just going to dinner and, stop by the house. And I just had a verbal offer, and he was like, "Go see it, get us your firm offer." So I went to go see it. And I was like, "Oh, like we were leaving." I was like, "Do you mind driving so I can like negotiate, so I can do this deal? Everything on text." So within about 10 minutes from the time we left the house to when we got to dinner, I was like, "Oh, yeah, we got it for, it was, they were asking 95 and we got it for like 78 or something." She was like, "Wait, what?" Like, yeah, we got it. She was like, what is wrong? Why was that so easy?" I was like, "'Cause I had a good relationship with them. 'Cause I buy from them a lot. There was no competition, not none. I think they sent it to like top five best buyers, but so like low competition because I built a relationship. Super easy. I never even got on the phone. By the time we got home from dinner, the documents were in my inbox, signed them, we're closing on Wednesday. This was on Friday.
I love it. I love it. Yep. We do that. We do that all the time. I love those kind of deals.
And it
So
doesn't have to be some big, like, you think, like, negotiations, like, you say the best you can do, they say the best they can do. If there's any ground to sort it out, do so. But I mean, my offer worked for them and I can close fast and they know I'm good. So they just took it. There really was no back and forth.
well, and the fact that they've worked with you before, and again, you've built that relationship and they know things about you. They know they can trust you. They know that you close fast. They know that when you say you're going to go and you're going to do a deal, that you're going to do it. You
100%.
don't back out at the last minute. And I know for those of you that are listening on this call, you might think, ah, oh, but how do I get there? That's just time and experience. And there's no shortcut to that. You just have to do that first deal and then that second deal. And then when you get to the third deal, you feel like you're on a roll. And it's just time and experience. There's no shortcut. Am I right, Jesse?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I work with a lot of first-time investors. Like, we literally have a challenge called 90-day challenge to buy your first rental. And so I've worked with, like, 100 students, I would say at least at this point, that it's their very first deal. And that is exactly, I mean, Kathy, that's exactly what we say too. It's like, I also offer myself up as a reference. So if they're working with a wholesaler and this person's like, hey, we've never worked with you, like, I don't know that you're good for it, I will look at their deal. I will even talk to a wholesaler if I need to. So there are some things you can do, but really ultimately it is time and experience.
Yep. At the end of the day, you just have to roll up your sleeves and start. Just start.
Start, and you're going to make mistakes. Like, if you're afraid of making mistakes, I'm telling you now, secret's out. You're gonna make them. You will. And so if that's what's stopping you, like, either just never do anything, and you're still gonna make mistakes in other parts of your life, why not make mistakes in this part of your life?
I think it's the money piece, Jesse. I think, if we only have $100,000 to spend, we want to make sure, and we know we're going to do our first deal. We want to make sure that we get across the finish line with our 100,000 and not end up losing the 100,000. And so I think that's probably why a lot of folks are afraid to pull the trigger on their first deal, is because they know that the mistake can be maybe an expensive one, and they don't.
Can you think of any story between yourself, your peers, any students that someone has, like, literally lost their entire investment?
No, never.
Never. You own an asset. You could buy a bad asset and it could be worth less than what you paid. We try to avoid that at all costs, but it's still worth something. Like, I've never seen anyone lose everything.
Right. And again, I say this to my students all the time, is that sometimes the difference between a good deal and a bad deal is time. Because if you overpay for a property, in 10 years, you're going to say, thank God I bought that when I did, because I couldn't
Totally.
touch it today for that. And so investing is a long-term strategy when you're investing in real estate. It's a long-term strategy, but you have to start, because if you don't start, 10 years is still going to pass whether you started or not. And you might as well end up with a few hundred thousand dollars in your bank account 10 years from now.
I mean, do it enough times, it's going to be a few million dollars.
Exactly. Well, and when you think about it, Jesse, you're right. When you think about it, I mean, let's say that a house, conservatively these days, a house could be 250. Like I just shared my story, my house appraised at 290. Well, how many of those do you need to be a millionaire? I mean, four deals and you've got $1 million worth of property. Yeah. When each one is a quarter of a million, it doesn't take long, to have a million or two or three or 10 in real estate when you get started.
Does not take long.
Yes, absolutely.
So
Absolutely.
that's, oh, here we go. We got a question. As a wholesaler that's just getting started and keeps putting in offers, keeps getting rejected, what do you do?
Okay,
Great.
this is Elizabeth. Okay.
Great question. So it is an absolute numbers game. It's also a speed game. So a lot of times, You know, Elizabeth, I don't know what marketing channels you're using,
And
but
Elizabeth, you can unmute and chat. I've got to where you can actually chat with us. So you can unmute and actually chat with Jesse if you'd like.
okay. Hello. Okay, so my question, we've been putting in a lot of offers, but we keep getting rejected. They're saying they're too low, and we're going by the system, I guess, but it seems not to be working. And I know we're just getting started and it takes time, but
How many
I think
offers? How many offers? When you say a lot of offers, how many have you put in, do you think?
About at least 15, I think maybe.
It's 1 in 20. 1 in 20 leads is
Oh, so we
typically
got five more to
yeah. So
go.
you're not quite there yet.
Well, good to know, because you can get discouraged with that, thinking, you know, I've done 15 and this isn't working. I need to find something else. So that's good to know. You know, in the numbers game, that you're not quite there yet, Elizabeth.
Where are you finding, like, what's your marketing channel?
We're going on the MLS. We do using the MLS.
So it may
And
be, honestly, in that scenario, it may be even more, because you're competing against the entire world. Everyone has access to it. So if you were doing your own marketing, which is, I would say, the most difficult of the four that I have for y'all today. If you're doing your own marketing, you're going to have less competition, but you're going to need to know a lot more of the process yourself. And so, you know, I think if you were doing bandit signs or, you know, texting and cold calling, there's a lot of regulations, so check into that. But some sort of outbound, or if you're paying for like PPC ads, like inbound or pay per lead, those things are going to have less competition. So maybe your low ball offer doesn't look so low compared to others. Jesse, go ahead and explain the different techniques that you were talking about. You said you had four you wanted to share today. Yeah,
Maybe
so
that'll help Elizabeth.
okay, so first I would say it was buying MLS through an agent. Then I would say it's through a wholesaler. Next, I would say is your referral network, your personal network, because you already have a leg up. Knowing the person or knowing someone who knows the person who's selling, there's going to be less competition, but you need to have your own contracts. You need to understand the title process. You need to like own a lot more of the actual transaction. And then last but not least, I would say is direct to seller marketing, which is what Elizabeth is doing. Is well, I guess you're not actually not doing direct seller. So are you looking to wholesale off the MLS?
Yes, that's what we're doing. Yes, wholesaling.
Yeah, I honestly think it, so it's not impossible by any means, but I think you're gonna have to make a really a lot of offers, because everyone has access to the deals and you're competing against like potential homeowners. And today with like HGTV, everyone, even like your best friends and their family, everyone wants a fixer upper because they know that they can add value. So even the fixer uppers are still going for near retail because people are willing to pay that. And so I think like, yeah, that's kind of a tight spot. Like if you want to do wholesaling, I would go direct to seller, not off the MLS.
Now, what about the foreclosures?
That would be direct to seller. You need to pull the list of foreclosures and pre-foreclosures, reach out to those people in some way, whether it's direct mail, texting, calling. Be really careful on texting and calling. Regulations have changed. Fines, there's like, I think you can go to prison or something crazy. So be careful on those, but you can direct mail them. You can door knock. You can do a bunch of stuff. But you go directly to them and say, hey, instead of a foreclosure, would you rather just sell your house? A lot more.
Now some of these are a lot of these are owned by the banks, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
Well, it depends on whether the foreclosure process has completed. If the process has completed, which takes, Jesse, tell me if I'm wrong, about 2 years to go through the
I
entire
would say at
foreclosure
least
process.
18 months. Yeah.
So it takes a couple of years to go through the process. Once, and again, the foreclosure process is important because during the foreclosure process, all of the liens are getting cut loose. So that when the bank owns it, the bank knows what they own at the end of the day, because the bank knows the bank isn't in the business of owning property. So the bank does not want to take the deed of that property. They do not want to own that property. So they're going to, during the foreclosure process, they're going to cut everything loose so that they can sell that property. So when it comes to foreclosures, my opinion, and again, I'll defer over to Jesse on this one as well, but my opinion is you either need to be first or you need to be last. Because if you're in the middle, it's messy.
Right.
But if a house is just getting ready to go into foreclosure, sometimes you can get it from the seller on a short sale and just avoid the whole foreclosure process. But that's where you have to understand yourself that you've got to be able to make sure that all the liens are cut loose so that you get the property free and clear. And right. Or wait till the very end after the bank has already cut all of the liens loose and it's free and clear for the bank to sell it. And you're at the very end, like me, where I just gave my bank some ridiculous number and they took it because they wanted to get the property off their book.
Right. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. I love it. Great question.
I do want to touch on that personal referral network, because I think that so many people overlook who they know, and not only who they know, but who, you know,
they know
separation.
They know, right?
Yeah. It just keeps going and going. And if you don't have at least, I mean, Kathy, how many people do you think know that you buy real estate? Hundreds?
Oh my gosh.
Thousands?
Thousands.
I would say, yeah, there's at least 1,000 people in my network that know that I buy real estate.
Okay.
If 5 people know that you buy real estate, that's going to be a little more challenging. So the just widening. And I think the power here is social media, because what you could go one-to-one and I could call up Kathy and say, hey, I buy houses. If you ever know anyone who's selling a house, give me a call. And I could do that 1,000 times. And how effective would that be? Or I could make one social media post a week about something I'm doing real estate related. And all of a sudden, instead of one-to-one, we're going one-to-many. And all of a sudden, hundreds, if not thousands of people know that I buy real estate. So when I'm saying, hey guys, if you know anyone that wants to sell a house, I'll pay you $1,000 if I buy that house, people's ears perk up.
Okay. Okay.
Elizabeth, do you have a social media program that you're doing currently?
No, not really. Not offhand. No.
Okay. So hardly anyone even knows that you're doing this.
Yeah.
Just a few people. Correct.
Okay. Yeah, you need to put yourself out there. If you go to mine or Jesse's social media right now, it's going to be full of both of us.
It's aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be aggressive, but I think that what I tell my students is a post a week at minimum.
Okay.
I do a post a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do a post a day. That's just,
so you're a full-time investor.
I would do more, but again, I'm trying to be retired. So I'm down to a post a day.
Yes, I'm retired too. So I have my daughters and I and granddaughter are doing this. Yes. And we're just getting started.
Yeah. So develop some sort of a social media plan where you can start putting yourself out there so that folks know you as the real estate lady, you know.
Yep.
Okay.
And offer cash to your network. If you refer me someone who needs to sell a house and we buy the house, I will pay you $1,000 cash. And then you know what? The first one you do, you show up and talk to your CPA. My CPA doesn't love when I do this, but you show up with literal, you know, 10 $100 bills and you take pictures. You take a ton of pictures with this person getting paid $1,000 and you put that all over social media. And then now everyone's like, okay, not only is she saying it, but now she's showing it.
Okay.
you know. And if your wholesale fee is 10 grand, I think like when back I stopped wholesaling, but back when I was doing it, we were like 12 to 14, maybe $1,000 for a free. I mean, come on. Yeah, of course I would pay that. So it was really a no-brainer. And then you get some of those pictures, you throw that over the internet, post that every once in a while, and people remember.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And another thing that I do too, and I'll just kind of add to that, and then we're going to move on to the next question, is I turn every picture into a post that it's kind of a passive aggressive on my part, but I turn every picture into a post that implies what it is that I do, even if I'm not aggressive with it.
Okay.
And because there's a silent message in there, you know, like if Mark and I are out on a date, I'll say, looking at houses today because it's my hobby, you know, so everybody knows that it's what I do.
Yeah.
So I turn every picture into a little marketing campaign.
Okay.
I've told you my secret now. Okay. So everybody now knows my secret when they see my post out there. They'll say, oh, Kathy just did that so that we would know she buys real estate. So y'all know my secret.
Yeah. To recap the four, I would say MLS, then wholesaler, then your personal network, and then direct to seller, which is a beast. If you are doing direct to seller at scale, it is a full-time job.
Yes. So it depends on where you are. You can make money a million different ways in real estate. And so Elizabeth is trying to be the wholesaler. But if you just want to buy some doors for buy and hold, and you don't want to be the wholesaler, then listening to Jesse, buying from a wholesaler is one of the strategies of finding those deals.
And I actually, so I was a wholesaler myself from 2018 when I started. We just stopped at the 2022, so about 4 years. And I stopped. I closed the business down and I buy myself off the MLS through my network and through wholesalers mostly.
Yeah, that's so, what I want to get to. Yeah.
Yeah. But it, I mean, wholesaling is a very active way to make money in real estate. And it's fantastic because once you, you know, get enough kind of revenue coming in and enough capital, you can turn around and start buying your own deals. And some of my best deals today were our own marketing. I mean, the last year and a half, I have just been buying wholesalers and MLS, and they're like, the deals make sense, but they are not nearly as good as when I was doing my own marketing. Not nearly as good.
Okay.
But it's time. You have to spend a lot of time marketing.
It's a full-time job. Yeah. We had an office. I had a staff. I was spending $15,000 a month on marketing. Like it was a big deal.
Okay.
So, yeah. And that's what made you successful though.
It is. Yeah. Because you have to learn every single part of the transaction. You have to learn everything.
And so now when you go into a transaction, it's just like the back of your hand because you've done so many. Yes, it's that experience we were talking about, folks. There's no shortcut to that. But it depends on where, again, reverse engineer that. What do you want your life to look like? If you just want to be sitting with five doors of rental properties or 10 doors, and you go, I would be so thrilled if I had 5 to 10 doors, that would make me happy. Then reverse engineer that. What do you have to do to start acquiring 5 to 10 doors so that you can start some cash flow coming in into your budget?
Yeah.
That's a little more passive. And again, real estate's not totally passive. You're still going to do the work up front. When you buy the property, you still have to do the carpet and the paint and the plumbing and get it ready to rent. But it becomes more and more passive the more you do and the more you learn and the more that you learn what to do and what not to do. And again, there's all kinds of thinking on buy and hold properties. And we're talking about finding today, but I will say this on the buy and holds. The one thinking is I'm going to go in and rehab everything top notch because I don't want any repairs for the next 10 years. And you're going to put some money into that property as soon as you buy it. Or you can go in totally the other end of the spectrum and you can say, I'm not going to fix it if it ain't broke. I am only going to fix what's broken, but I'm going to make it look nice. I'm going to freshen it up. I'm going to make sure the paint looks good, the carpet looks good, and I'm going to make sure all the mechanicals are working and that the roof's not leaking, but I know that's an old furnace. I know that's an old hot water tank. I know that roof is probably going to need replaced in the next 5 years, but I'm not going to do it until it tells me it needs done. In other words, you're going to get a call one night that says, I don't have any hot water, or my furnace went out, or I've got water coming through my ceiling. I've got a water stain on my ceiling. My roof's leaking. And then you go in and fix it. So, and then you can be anywhere in the middle. You can be anywhere in the middle. You might say, I'm doing all new mechanicals, but I'm only going to fix the roof when it needs it. Or I'm going to put all new roofs on every property I buy, and I'm only going to fix the mechanicals when they need it. Or I'm going to fix everything. So you can decide where it is that you want to be in this business, and you can still be successful at any one of those levels. Does that make sense to everybody? So that's on buy and hold. So you don't have to spend a ton of money if you can get into a deal. If you're just getting started and capital is a big deal for you right now to get started, you can buy that first rental and you don't have to put a whole new roof on it and all new mechanicals and all new windows and all new floors and all. You don't have to do all of that. You might not get the same amount of rents, but you can still get it rented and get some income coming in. And then you can use that money to fix it up as you go. So you can still get started even if you don't have a lot of reserve.
So I am option number one. We aim for 10 years, no CapEx or capital expenditures, which is mechanicals and roof and windows that Kathy was saying. We aim for 10 years, relatively maintenance free. And the reason is I'm trying to get my highest appraised value as quick as possible. That's my own strategy because we are, you know, I'll do my full cosmetic, full mechanical in 60 days, we will have it rented in another 30, refinanced in another 30. So I've now forced my appreciation by the goals 25% minimum, sometimes 30, sometimes 40% in less than half a year. And I'm getting my money back. So that's the Burr method. That's the strategy I use. But there is definitely a get in with as little money possible and then let it ride, but you need to really understand what the consequences are. Like a new HVAC system is $5,500. Like, do you have that to the side? You know, so we're replacing what we can up front, getting that money back. And then the idea is I don't have to touch it for a long time.
And again, there's both strategies and then 101 million spots in the middle. So again, you don't have to do one or the other. You can experience is going to be the answer. You're going to do a few of them and you're going to say, I don't like that call in the middle of the night. I'm going to go ahead and update everything.
That's what I did. And I wish I could tell you it only took a couple. It took a couple dozen before I was like, okay, Jesse, quit cheaping out and just do the repair because you're going to regret it in a couple years from now. It took me many, many times to learn that lesson.
So anyway, any questions there, feel free to jump in. Let's talk about how you do the numbers. How do the numbers work for you when you're finding the deal?
Yep. So I'm still old school. I think some of the, you know, there's a million different ways you can do this, but I learned MAO, maximum allowable offer. That is what I still use today. It's basically ARV. So what is the property worth after it's fixed up, after repair value, times we use 0.75. So if ARV is 200K, 0.75 would be 150, then minus repairs. So ARV times 0.75 minus repairs, and say repairs are 30. So that means 200 times 0.75 is 150. 150 minus 30 repairs is 120. So the most I can pay is 120. If I get it for 110, awesome. Like, let's do it. If I get it for 80, cool, even better. So that's still to this day the strategy I use.
And which is very safe. It's a very safe strategy. For those of you like me that are more of a conservative risk taker, I identify myself as a conservative risk taker. Everybody goes, Kathy, you're such a risk taker. And I'm like, I'm actually kind of a conservative risk taker because I make sure my numbers work so that I have an out at the other end.
Yeah.
If I decide I need to sell the property, I still can sell the property if I need to do that. Because again, everyone needs a place to live. So someone somewhere is going to buy that property from you. If you, for whatever reason, decide that I messed up on this one, I just need to sell it. And we've sold a couple. We started buying rehabs and then we got a little overzealous and we thought, well, if we could rehab a little, we certainly could rehab a lot. And so we bought several that were a little bigger projects maybe than what we had done in the past. And poor Mark got burned out rather quickly. And he said, I thought I wanted to do this. He said, but it's a little too much. He said that, you know, fixing basement walls and putting in new standpipes and and doing underground plumbing. He said that that's a little bigger projects, he said, than maybe what I wanted to tackle. And so we did sell a couple and we ended up doing fine. I mean, we didn't take a loss on them, but we didn't make a big profit either. But it was just a decision we made that we bought a couple that we probably shouldn't have early on. And then we just simply flipped them, sold them again. Yeah. And so there is really no bad deal in real estate. There's only good, better, and best.
Good, better, and best. Bad ones. If you can't, if you don't have the luxury of time, the ability to kind of wait it out. I mean, I've lost money on a deal for sure. So I've bought a bad deal. Don't worry about that.
Okay. So give us, so that's how your numbers work for you. Yep. What happens then when you know, we all watch those HGTV shows. If you like real estate, you know, you kind of gravitate towards some of those just to see what, and we all realize that they're making a show and we all realize that they end right at commercial time at a cliffhanger when, you know, the crew goes, and we found this big problem. Yeah. And then everybody on the camera set goes, ugh. And then it goes to commercial and you're like, oh my gosh, what's the problem? Jesse, what do you do when you find a big problem? And it and your numbers all of a sudden are not quite what you thought they were going to be.
We have reserves. I fix the problem and move on.
Okay. So what kind of reserves do you put back? For those of you that are listening, what kind of reserves?
So we like to hold 6 months of all expenses. So pretty much mortgage, principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and some lawn care and stuff. I don't really get into the nitty gritty. I look at my mortgage payments, taxes, insurance, and multiply that by six. That's what we hold in reserves. If I have to tap into it, the next couple months of incoming rent, I just redistribute to make sure it's back up to the level.
Okay. So you're holding 6 months in reserve.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a good strategy. Any comments or questions from anyone so far? Now, what indicators do you look at to know that a house or a neighborhood has potential for appreciation versus maybe it's not quite ready to take off?
Just throw a dart at Columbus, Ohio, and you'll be just fine.
And we're all Central Ohio on this call. So, yes. Yeah.
Columbus is absolutely fantastic place to be investing in real estate right now. And we're also, the strategy that we're using is, puts me at, you know, a renovated asset with only 75% leverage. So I still have 25% equity. And so even if somehow Columbus stalled its appreciation or even worst case, like declined, which
I mean, we all know isn't going to happen.
Yeah, no prediction, like not even a fraction. Some absolute tragedy would have to strike, no matter what. But even if that were to happen, I would still have 25% of the property's value to play with before I ever got into the world of losing money on a deal. And so, like, what am I looking at? I would say the thing I like the most is when a neighborhood is congruent. Meaning all the houses are similar, year built, floor plans, you know, lot sizes, similar garages or basements. And the reason is, if I can tell very easily, like if I can run comps and I can see very easily what it will be worth when it's fixed up, so can my appraiser. And so it takes away a lot of the risk of, if you're buying a five bedroom something in the middle of a neighborhood that's all two bedrooms, I mean, good luck trying to figure out what that's worth. You know what I mean? So
I get that.
I like to buy houses in congruent neighborhoods. If you look at our portfolio, almost everything is in neighborhoods where everything else around it looks the same.
So easy to appraise, easy to put back on the market if you need to, easy to know what your competition is when you're rehabbing so that you end up with the best house on the block. You get the
And
best rent.
you learn your numbers at a really like instinctual level versus having to every single time run, before I buy something, of course I'm gonna run comps. Of course I'm gonna, do a full analysis of the photos or the walkthrough or whatever. But when I'm just like spitballing offers back and forth with someone, I'm pretty much going off my gut instinct. Like, hey, I know this is going to be worth 170 because I own three others over there that were all worth 170. Or they were worth, 150, 160 a year ago and 6 months ago. Well, let's look at the trend, right? And you can do that with your own portfolio if you're buying in neighborhoods that all look the same. I can run my own comps in my head based on my own properties.
That's a good point. That's a
Yeah.
good point. So you're not having to wait for numbers to come back before you can determine if this is a good deal or not. Keisha has a question. Keisha, go ahead and speak up.
Talking about comps, when you're looking at comps, are you looking at properties that sold or properties that are currently on the market?
I look at both, but I only go with sold.
So.
Yeah. I would only use sold because, I mean, someone could ask any price. Maybe the neighborhood is worth 200K average and someone could ask a million. Cool. You can do whatever you want. You're not gonna get it. So
Right.
we just go on what someone has actually paid.
Okay, thank you.
And that's why if you're in a neighborhood and you can do your own comps because you know what you paid for the last four houses in that neighborhood. So you already know what the houses are going for.
Yep. You know
Yeah.
how much it's going to cost to fix it because it's the same soil and maybe one had a small foundation issue that you had to deal with. And so now you know the next one may have that same issue. So that's really what I like to look at.
Jesse, I love that. That's a great strategy. Go through the BRRRR method with us. We're at the top of the hour. Go through the BRRRR method so that everyone on the call understands what that actually is. This is Jessie's superpower. This is what she does after she went through the whole wholesaling bit and decided to buy and hold. She is using this strategy, and it's how she has built her portfolio so quickly. And so
Yes.
share with our folks how that works, and then tell our folks how they can connect with you if they want to tap into your program.
So the BRRRR method is fantastic. It is, I did not invent it, but I have done a pretty good job perfecting it. So you buy a asset under market value because it needs work, right? You're buying a distressed property. You're buying it with either your own cash, not my favorite, but possible your own cash, hard money, or private money, because you need to really, in a lot of these situations, close fast. So you're buying it distressed under market value. You do your renovations up to market standards. Don't over renovate, or you're never going to see that money back. Then you have your renovated property. You put that on the market. You get a market rate tenant. So maybe, the person before had it rented for 800. You now can rent it for 13, 1400, right? Because it's renovated. So then you have a renovated asset with a market rate tenant. You take this nice little package that you made to a long-term lender, because remember, you're using hard or private money or your own cash. And so those people need either paid back or paid off, like, very quickly. I say very quickly, under 12 months typically. So you have 12 months to get through this process. You take it, this nice package you made, to a refinance lender. They're going to have it appraised again, but now it's worth a lot more. They're going to give you 75% of what that what the new value is. And then you pay off your private money, hard money, or yourself, and you have 25% equity, and you go and do it again.
And again, and again, and again, and again, and again.
And again. And you do it forever and ever and ever, and you never stop. And you can stop one day, but don't stop for like 5 years.
Well, and then again, you have to also ask yourself, what do you want your life to look like? And so one of the things that you have to decide at the other end is, are you going to manage all of those? Are you going to pay for a property manager to manage all of those? You know, how are you going to handle the actual management of those properties? And again, there's, you can self-manage, or you can have a property manager manage, or you can do a combination somewhere
in
between.
Are you coming to Coin tomorrow?
I am, yes.
So the topic is self-manage versus property manage. And it's a friendly debate. I'm actually the self-managed. Yes. Yeah, I'm speaking on self-management. And so
I self-manage as well. So I'm in your corner on this one, Jesse, because I self-manage as well.
Yeah. So, should we divide the room? Should we have like, that'd be fun. Like the aisle.
That would be fun. Yeah,
we'll do that.
All the self-managers over here, all the property managers over here.
Yeah, I love it. So if y'all being in Central Ohio, if you don't know about Coin, I'm sure you do because of Kathy, but y'all should definitely come. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah. If you go to KathyBenner.com and scroll down to my calendar, it's on my calendar. It gives you all the details. It's at 5 o'clock. And Jesse, give us the actual address. I know where it is, but I don't have the address memorized. Do you offhand? It's on my calendar. Let me just pull up my calendar. But if you guys have some time tomorrow, definitely put it on your calendar. It is tomorrow night. It's called The Coin. And it is at the Ohio Brewing Company at 421 East 2nd Avenue in Columbus. Ohio Brewing Company. We have a private room in the back. And it's 421 East 2nd Avenue in Columbus. And Jesse, am I correct? There's going to be food and a bar and all of that.
Yes. Bar hosted by our sponsor. Can I post it in the chat?
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to grab this link.
So feel free to attend that. Tell them Kathy and Jesse sent you. If anybody asks how you heard about it.
I just posted the event in the chat. So that's all of our stuff.
Cool. Yeah, so we'd love to see you there. Jesse's going to be a speaker, and I might play devil's advocate since I
no don't do it.
No, I'll behave myself. Yeah, because I self manage as well. Any questions for Jesse before we go today? This has been a great conversation. I hope it has inspired you to take your next step, whatever that is. Now, I'll just share, Jesse, how many properties do you have that you're buying and holding?
70.
70. I have 28. Sue, how many? Sue might be multitasking. Because she turned her camera off.
Yeah.
Alexis, do you have any properties yet? Oh, Sue, back to Sue. Sue, how many properties, Sue?
We have 5 single family.
Okay, so you're, and do you self-manage or do you have a property manager?
We self-manage.
Self-manage, okay. Alexis, do you have some properties yet?
No, I do not.
Okay, do you own the house that you're in?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to go out on a limb here and see what Jesse thinks. If it were me, I would probably look for a duplex and house hack.
Yeah, that's how I started. I mean, not a duplex, but I was crazy. Yeah. I was letting people live in, like, sharing a kitchen and stuff. Don't do that.
Jesse, I still house hack. I run a bed and breakfast in my home. I rent out the bedrooms individually.
What about, like, some... Are you not worried about, like, crazy people?
No, I've got an owner suite locked off in the back.
Yeah. I look back now, and if my parents knew what I was doing, they probably would.
Yeah, but Alexis, you could house hack and let your tenants pay for the whole thing. Yeah, so that would be my advice to get started, to get your first one. And you can always turn it into a total rental later down the road.
Yes, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Keisha, how about you? Do you have a property yet?
No, I'm just getting started.
Okay. Do you own the house you live in?
I don't. I'm renting.
Okay, say I same advice as Alexis. I would house hack. I would get a duplex or a fourplex. You can get up to a fourplex and still get an FHA loan. And Keisha, you're not going to believe this, but you probably can buy something less than you're paying in rent.
Literally. That's how we make money, because we charge you more than our mortgage.
Yeah, so you probably could own something for less than you're paying in rent.
I believe that. I believe that.
Yeah. So come to this coin meeting and learn how to do this. Elizabeth, how about you? Do you have any that you own currently?
Yes, I do. I own my condo. I live in a condo. Awesome. Yes, I do.
Okay. So you own, but do you have any investment properties in addition to the one you're living in?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. So for you, the Burr method would be a perfect opportunity for you to get started in having a couple of buy and holds. And let's just say, now, Jesse and I might disagree on numbers here. I like all my buy and holds to cash flow at a minimum of 500 a month. That's kind of my thing. I think Jesse's is a little lower, but let's just say if you had a couple of properties that was cash flowing 500 a month, would $1,000 a month in your budget make a difference?
Oh, yes, it would.
Yeah.
Yes.
So start thinking about that. And okay. Tom, how about you? Tom, where are you coming to us from? We didn't get to ask you that when you came on.
Hi, Kathy. I'm from DC. I think I met you last year one time.
Yes.
And I own my house and I bought a quadplex and I'm still trying in the process of renovating.
Okay. Okay.
So it's a long process. I'm still trying to do it by myself, which may or may not be a mistake, but.
Oh, Tom, I think you and I met too.
Yeah.
And again, there's two schools of thought on that. You can do all the work yourself, and as long as you can afford to hang in there on your holding cost, or you can get some private money or hard money and just get across the finish line, refinance it, pay that off, and be done and have it rented.
Yeah, well, holding is not a big issue because I can still handle the holding costs, but I do want to get it up and going. So that's like the one goal I've got.
Well, hang in there. Jesse has to jump off here real soon. So one last person, Patricia, do you have some properties that you own already?
I'm sorry, I had a call come through.
do you have properties already?
No, ma'am, I don't.
Okay, so you're just getting started as well.
Yes.
Well, you know what? You're in the right place. Tap in every month. We are here every month with a different topic. Today's topic, of course, was how to find the deal. And we go through how to find it, how to fund it, how to fix it, then how to either flip it or fill it. And then finally, what is your freedom number? How many of these do you have to do to make that day job optional? And we are here the third Monday of every month at 12 noon, same Zoom link. So save the link that you use today. It's going to be the same one every third Monday at 12 noon. And we'll see you here next time.
All right.
All right. Thanks for being with us, everyone. And we will see you again soon.
I did All right. post. I posted in the chat our Facebook group.
Oh, yes.
Where I teach people how to buy and manage long-term rentals. It's just like this, but a whole lot more. So it's okay. Actually the second one after the coin.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Oh. And on the replay, I will also put how to connect with Jesse. So yeah. If any of you want to connect with her to get into her Burr training program, feel free to do that. I personally have a little mastermind that we do off the beaten path, where we actually go out and we'll walk properties with you. We did one just yesterday for our members. So if you want to join my group, you can. If you want to join Jesse's group, you can. But find a mentor that will help take you across that finish line on your first deal and just get started.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Have a great day.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. And we'll see everyone next month.
Bye.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.